I knew it was doomed from the start.
That were an amazing time. Beethoven was right, of course. He usually was. May he rest in peace.
And his bumper coming out of bowl, big man...
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Brian Johnston introducing the amazing Test Match Crime by Adrian Allington. Dramatised by Peter Thomson, with Tom Wilkinson, Madeline Smith, Trevor Nichols, Nicholas Leprevo, and Bill Patterson.
Oh, yes. He was an amazing man. An amazing test match.
An audacious crime. I'll give it that.
In the 1930s, Adrian Allington wrote a book. He called it The Amazing Test Match Crime, and it was sold as fiction. Of course, both he and the reading public knew it was nothing of the sort. But the laws of libel were, and still are, troublesome creatures, so he was understandably cautious. 50 years have passed since then, and yet it is only now that we can bring you what would be called in the publishing trade the unexpurgated version. The reasons for this will become clear to you as our story unfolds. Some of the principal protagonists involved in this extraordinary story have kindly allowed themselves to be interviewed, and their testimony sheds new light on the startling events that took place that long summer past. Those parts of the story that we feel have been most fully corroborated, we have dramatised. The rest is from source. On one count, alas, we have failed. We were hoping to bring you an interview with perhaps the most extraordinary of the participants in this story, the Professor. We're convinced he's still alive, but sadly, we failed to track him down. Our researcher has been following a path now for 3 years, a path that began in an antiquarian bookshop in Tottenham Court Road, moved on to Victoria Station, involved a decommissioned submarine, a camel train, the Trans-Siberian Railway, a hair-raising encounter with the Ichu tribe of Tanzania, the World Bank, revolutions in 3 separate continents, a hairdresser in Panama, an ice hockey team from the Fiji Islands, the Sultan of Brunei, and finally, a second-hand fishing tackle shop in Rio de Janeiro. There, the trail finally went cold. This is a great pity, since the Professor is the only man still alive who could tell us who his employers were. The 30s in Britain. A war behind and a war ahead. It is perhaps inevitable that our story, amidst all the drama and tragedy that was to come, should be forgotten. But we believe that but for these events, that war might never have happened. And we might not now be what we are. A nation without an empire. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Test Match Crime.
One must set this thing in some sort of context.
Sir Norman Blood, ex-captain of England and son to Sir Timothy Blood.
You see, one must remember that the two nations had just emerged from a most bruising and destructive confrontation. I'm referring to the Bodyline controversy, of course. So this test series was always going to be a delicate affair. Bridges needed to be mended, amity restored, decency re-established.
Nicely put, Norm.
Mr. Lethbridge, ex-captain of Australia.
I'd only played the game once or twice, so it all came as a bit of a surprise.
Joe Prestrick. Joe and his wife Monica, with their 2 sons Jack and Len, still live in the sleepy village of Wattlecombe Deuces, still in the cottage they moved into after their marriage.
We called it Googly Cottage, after one of my best balls. Anyway, where was I?
You were telling him how we met.
Oh, that's right. Now, remember, this was all in the year before the year, you know, the year when all this happened, you see, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnston.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnston.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Well, this was a year before. So it were Boggers Parva that we were playing.
I think you should explain who we were, dear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, we were Wattlecombe Deuces. That's where we came from. That's in Glebeshire. And we were playing Boggers Parva.
Well, you weren't exactly.
No, that's right. I wasn't playing the game. I was just watching, you see.
A spectator.
That's right. And you see, I'd never played the game before.
Only once or twice.
Once or twice, you see. Anyways, I'm standing there by the boundary.
Near the pavilion?
Near the pavilion. And the club captain comes up to me.
Tom Apps.
Tom Apps, that's right. So, it appears, Mr. Johnson, that Tom Apps, the blacksmith, who's Wattle Conducis's fast bowler, has been hit in he's been hit by a horse, and so he can't play. So this captain comes up to me, and he says, you Joe Prestwick? Yes, I says back.
Ever played cricket before?
Once or twice.
Well, you're playing now. Well, chop, chop, we're in the field.
So there I was on the field.
Braces.
The problem was, I was wearing braces.
Poor old Joe, wearing braces.
That's right.
He'll never be allowed to forget it.
Anyway, the score's 40 for no wicket, and that squire's son's going like the clappers. And the captain comes up to me and says,
ever bowled before?
Only once or twice.
Well, you're bowling now.
And everybody was laughing in the pavilion.
Because you were wearing braces.
Yeah, but they were soon laughing on the other side of their faces, though, weren't they?
Oh. By golly, he's out! That braces chappy has bowled my son.
It was his braces, Peter. They put me off. Damn it, you can't expect a fella to bat against a man in braces.
Rotten shell.
And it weren't long before it were 41 for 5.
When I arrived.
And that's when Monica arrived. Or Miss Monica, as I called you then.
41 for 5? What a wizard spell. I must cycle off to fetch Sir Timothy.
And Sir Timothy arrived just in time to see old Joe take the last Boghurst wicket.
My goodness, he's taken all 10 wickets.
But good heavens, girl, the fella's playing in braces.
Does that matter?
Huh? I would rather see the whole village dead at my feet than a man bowling for the team in braces.
Peter was a great believer in things. Fine man, though I am. May he rest in peace.
I may, no?
Well, I was stumped for a moment, but suddenly I had a brilliant idea. I jumped on my bike and pedalled off. Poor old Joe, though.
Oh, what?
Nobody talked to you.
Oh, that's right. Nobody would talk to me on account of my braces.
Until I came back, peddling away, fit to burst. I jumped off my bike and came towards you. With a cricket belt in my hand.
Oh, with a cricket belt in her hand.
Wear this, please.
Oh, thanks awfully.
Oh, not at all. Wear it, please, for my sake. Good luck in the second innings. One day I know you will play for England.
Wear it, please, for my sake. Miss Monica.
Well, of course, the rest is no doubt recorded in some scorebook somewhere. 10 wickets in the second innings, making all 20 in the match. No mean feat. Still, one must remember that we're talking about club cricket here and not get things out of perspective.
Well, Sir Timothy, isn't he good?
Trouser should be kept in position by invisible means, or failing that, by a scarf bearing the colours of a good club. But the boy is undoubtedly a discovery.
Well, Peter was right, of course. The boy was a discovery. His batting was a little bit agricultural. One couldn't expect anything else under the circumstances. But his bowling was interesting enough to warrant a place in the Glebeshire County side by the end of that summer.
All 20 wickets, you say? No. Must admit I'd never heard that story before.
Ralph Blessinger, who with his wife Alice now lives a settled and uneventful life in a country south of Spain and north of the Sahara. Daily he greets his neighbours, and none think to ask him what he might once have done for a living.
That previous summer? Well, I think it was the summer of the presidential assassination, wasn't it? Of course, everybody thought he died in his sleep. But by the time the Australians docked in Southampton, we were back in Europe.
Yeah, that's right. Norman Blood was captain of Glebeshire. Sir Norman, as he is now. And he was kind enough to pick me for the last few county games of that season, you see, Mr. Johnson. Well, it's the sort of thing schoolboys dream about. But in my case, it weren't a dream. It were the truth. It were like a dream come true. Not that I'd ever dreamed I'd play.
Of course, Norman was strongly favoured to lead the side against the Australians the following year. He was a wonderful cricketer and a wonderful man.
She said that, did she? How is she? Been years since I've seen her. Fine woman. Still live in Googly Cottage, does she? Anyway, enough of that. Where were we? Ah, yes, the arrival of the Australians the next summer. Keenly anticipated. Bodyline series and all that. Quite an event, eh, Leth?
Well, we took our cricket seriously, didn't we, Norm? Listen to them arriving. I remember wondering whether I'd ever get a chance to bowl against them in a test match.
Gazing at the belt.
Yeah, gazing at the belt I'd been given by Miss Monica.
Polishing it.
I'm polishing it. The buckle, that is. I'm writing poems in my head. And listening.
As I stand here amidst this great crowds of enthusiastic humanity, I can see the lights flickering over Southampton docks. It's like fairyland. The fleet is all lit up to welcome to these hallowed shores the mighty Australians, who, within a month, a little month, will launch a new test series. And here comes Lethbridge, captain of Australia and batsman extraordinaire. And following him comes Bumper, vice-captain and fast bowler extraordinaire. Hyperion's curls, the front of Jove himself, though a veritable demon on the field of play. And I'm shuffling my way through this seething mass of mortal coil to put to Lethbridge those questions that I know are hanging on everyone's lips. Mr. Lethbridge, on behalf of the BBC and the world, may I welcome you to these hallowed shores.
Everyone is very fit.
Everyone is very fit. That's absolutely splendid. Now, so tell me, how do you see the test matches going?
May the best team win.
That's right, Skip.
Splendid, splendid. Now, Trent Bridge, it has been said, is an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Does this in any way worry you?
One for all and all for one.
Now, Mr. Bumper, there are players that I have seen play and heard others praise them that highly. But you, Mr. Bumper, oh my goodness, all the lights have gone out. They've put out all the lights. All the fairy lights have departed and left no addresses. It's gone all dark. Well, I never. No sun, no moon. Will you shut up? The...
Well, yes, of course, I hoped I'd be asked to be captain for the series. But you must remember that cricket's the king of games and the game of kings, and nothing's won until it's not lost. So I never counted my chickens before they hatch. But, yes, I was hopeful.
Your dad was one of the selectors, wasn't he?
I hardly think that has any bearing on the matter.
Oh, yes, yes. I adored the game, all right. No two ways about it. I live for it, still do. But, as the bard says, there's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow.
You could have played, Ralphie.
Shut up, Alice.
Blessinger. Ralph Blessinger. No, can't say I do. Now, wait a minute. Yes, by George, of course.
Am I right in thinking you were Sir Norman Blood's fag at school?
Oh, so you've ferreted that out, have you? Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, I was.
My fag. Always burning my toast. Well, well, well. Good God, hadn't thought about him for donkeys. Clever little fella. Good little leggy, too. Hold your horses. Wasn't he expelled or something? That's right. For drinking port in a pub after lights out. Of course, quite a stir at the time. Nice flipper, if memory serves me correctly.
I was discovered in the pub by the French master, Mr. Pablo. I took out my gun and shot him.
It just wasn't done, drinking in pubs. The head had no choice. What do we used to call him? That's right, Ralph the Disappointment. Could have been a useful leggy. What about him, anyway?
The professor called us the bad men.
had a rather sophisticated sense of humour.
You're joking. Blessinger? One of the bad men? No, impossible. Good God. Do you think we drove him to it?
Couldn't help worshipping him, despite the fact that he was unspeakably vicious. It's often the way, isn't it, Alice?
Yes.
Yes, she says.
Well, well, well. One of the bad men, eh? Nice looking boy, too.
That summer.
It was a wonderful summer, wasn't it, old Joe?
Oh, it was, yeah.
Summer and sunshine and falling in love, as the song has it. Of course, Daddy and I went to all the tests.
Well, the first four tests hadn't produced a result, as you probably know. Well, of course, the Old Trafford test was rained off, and the heading of a kid was a batsman's paradise. You scored a few there, didn't you, Les?
186 and 227 not out, no?
So the last test at the Oval was awaited with keen anticipation. And remember that it was timeless, timeless test, to be fought to the finish. They'd never tried that before, had they, Les?
No, no, that's right, no?
A timeless test match. Oh, it was terribly exciting. In fact, it had been a wonderful series altogether. That man Lethbridge was a giant of a cricketer. Rather put our Mr. Blood in the shade, didn't he? But I was terribly homesick. Remember that I hadn't been back to England for over 10 years.
After the fourth test, went back to Glebeshire. Stayed with Pater in the manor house. Remember sitting out on the lawn. Glorious summer day. Not the faintest inkling of what was to come.
Willis, we'll have tea under the trees today.
Yes, Timothy.
Oh, and Willis, put out an extra teacup, would you? We may be having a visitor.
Would that be the lovely Miss Monica, young Mr. Norman?
Willis, how many times have I got to tell you that he is not to be addressed as young Mr. Norman? Oh. You are addressing Mr. Norman Blood, Captain of England and Batsman Extraordinaire.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that, Father. After all, I've only scored one century all summer, and all four matches have been drawn.
True, true, but don't forget, you scored your century at Lord's, which, as you know, my boy, is the headquarters of the game, as well as the mecca of cricket lovers in all corners of the globe.
Yes, I know, Father.
At Lord's. And by George, my boy, I love every stick and stone, every brick and blade of the old
know,
place.
I know, Father.
It was at Lord's in the gentlemen and players match of 97 that I was batting with Tiddles Marshbanks.
That wouldn't be SPQ Marshbanks, Cambridge and Southshire.
The same, my boy. I was one of the few who were privileged to address him as Tiddles. Oh, well, as I say, we were
betting. Here comes Monica.
Cheerio, you two men things.
Ah, Monica, like a ray of sunshine. You ought to play tennis, are we?
No, why?
Well, you've got your tennis racket in your hand.
Oh, by Jove, so I have. I must have lightly caught it up when leaving the vicarage.
What have you been up to today?
I've been up at Farmer Clutterbuck's, nursing a sick cow.
How good you are. And how unselfish.
I like to bring gladness wherever I go.
Everything and everyone in Wattle Conducis loves our Monica. How is your father, my dear?
Poor dear, he's in disgrace. He's been dreadfully absent-minded again. In giving out the second lesson this morning, he said the epistle to the Australians instead of the Galatians.
Did he, by gad?
Old Simpkins the verger has been scolding him dreadfully.
Yeah, well, stupid mistake, but not altogether unnatural. Of course, there are wide differences. I mean, the Galatians, for example, were not cricketers. Oh, the tea interval. Monica, my dear, you must pour for us.
Righty-ho. Hello there, Willis.
Good afternoon, Miss Monica.
Willis, you remember those donkey drops Monica used to bowl?
Indeed I do, young Mr. Norman.
They were always my undoing.
You used to let me get you out.
Oh, indeed he didn't, miss. Your donkey drops caused young Mr. Norman much anguish, many an evening.
That'll be all, thank you, Willis.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Your tea, Norman.
Ah, Monica, you were a picture. Slight as a will-o'-the-wisp. Golden ringlets tumbling down over your fair shoulders, your slim arms softly carving a gentle curve through the panting air. And then, oh, sweet surrender. My castle was captured, my sticks unstuck, my bales unbuttoned, all undone.
Talking of slow bowlers, What do you think of young Joe Prestwick? Should we pick him for the Oval? Anything the matter, my dear?
Whilst young love was burgeoning in the sweet vales of Wattlecombe Deuces, somewhere in a foreign part, two men were waiting.
Dear Mama, so here I am in this dumb burg, waiting with my old buddy Ralphie for the professor, who indeed is deserving of this title on account of his big head and his little body.
Thornoff Carlow, our inveterate letter writer, a man with the most uncharacteristic eye for detail. It's through these letters that we've been able to piece together so much of the story. Thornoff Carlow is still alive and was able to give us persuasive reasons as to why his current identity should be kept secret.
The big shot is late.
He'll come.
Oh, sure he'll come, Ralphie, buddy. The professor sure don't like to mess the bad men around. You know, Ralphie, these foreign burgs sure get a guy down. They have proved a great disappointment to me.
Don't say that word.
Sorry. Gee, I'd sure like to be home now.
I don't want to talk about home. All right.
Sorry, Ralphie.
Don't call me Ralphie.
Say, buddy, do I ever tell you how I put Al Campanoli on the spot?
Several times.
Oh, shucks, that's tough. Do I tell you how I croaked Theodore the Gink?
Yes.
Here comes the big guy. Today, the big guy is disguised as an engine driver, which is a very good disguise, since if you didn't know who he was, you'd never know it was him.
My dear sirs, this is indeed a surprise.
Hiya, boss.
You fool. Have I not told you that we are to meet all with the strangers?
Ah, oh, boss, there ain't no G-men around in this dumb burg.
It is better, my dear Carlo, to be a bad man than a dead man. And now, my friends, we speak of business. You know why we are here?
Sure, we're gonna muscle in our ball game racket.
You are, as usual, inaccurate. In England, which is to be the scene of our operations, these contests are spoken of not as the ball game, but as matches of crickets.
Oh, dear.
The operations upon which we are about to embark are, I think I may say, of a more far-reaching character than anything we have yet attempted. They have as their object no less than a blow at the heart of that great empire, which our friend Ralph here has so hugely disappointed.
No, please.
Who our employers are must remain a secret even from you, my friends. Let it suffice to say that international interests of the first importance are involved. In consulting me, these gentlemen have shown wisdom of a high order.
You sure loathe and despise yourself, boss.
I trust I have a tolerably just appreciation of my own remarkable powers.
Inevitably, a man of the professor's stature generates endless rumors. We would like to put on record what is firmly established as fact. We know he was born of humble peasant stock. His first utterance was square root. He was 6 weeks old at the time. We have film of him leaving Einstein's house. He said of that encounter, "The man is shallow. He should stick to the violin." By the age of 20, he had written his masterpiece, The Essence of the Absolute. Wittgenstein writes of it as a work of unparalleled genius. Unfortunately, general opinion did not concur. It was regarded by most as unintelligible. This rejection of his masterpiece was obviously wounding. Like Moriarty before him, he became an enemy of society. And now he was about to essay his most ambitious project.
The complete disruption of the British Empire. A task which, as you can imagine, would probably daunt an intellect less remarkable than mine. Having given the matter some thought, however, I have been able to devise a scheme of unparalleled subtlety and effectiveness. It became obvious to me that the British Empire is held together entirely by a series of contests of a game called cricket. Indeed, it is almost impossible to realize the extraordinary reverence with which this cricket is regarded, not only by what is called in the press the sporting fraternity, but by all classes, from the highest to the lowest. Am I not right, Ralph?
Yes.
So firm is the hold which this cricket has upon Englishmen of all classes that it has, in fact, become a synonym for virtue. Thus, an outraged husband, discovering his best friend in the embraces of his wife, will exclaim, "This behavior is not cricket's, by Jove," an observation which would appear to be self-evident. And so you see, my friends, A blow struck at this national custom is a blow at the very heart of proud Albion.
No! No! I cannot be a party to this thing.
Rebellion, Ralph?
Oh, heaven knows I am not a pucker fellow. In fact, I am a really bad fellow. Mine has been a life full of shame. But there are limits beyond which even the worst fellow cannot go. But I was ready to join in the assassinating of the president of Gomilia and in blowing up the national bag of Gloritania. But to interfere with a cricket match, and in particular, a test match, no. No, no, Professor, low as I have sunk, I am not as loathsome as that.
You disappoint me, Ralph.
No, no, no. Please,
don't. Does he know how much he disappoints me, Carl?
Oh, I guess he does, judging by the way he's writhing on the floor.
Tell me, Ralph, how much you disappoint me.
Oh, must I remember? Oh, I'm most disappointed in you, Blessinger, my housemaster. Blessinger, you've brought a great disappointment to me as my headmaster. You've disappointed me, son, my father. Oh, Rafe, what a disappointment you are, my mother. Regardez mes amis, Ralph, le disappointment. Such a rally, my soldier. Fit for a legion. Ralph, el chasco. Ralph, el desillusion.
The disappointment. Splendid. Now will you obey my orders?
I will obey your orders.
It is well, my friend. You shall have your complete instructions, both of you, within a few days. For the moment, I have no more to say. Good day, my old friends. It is indeed a pleasure to have revived these happy memories. I must go now and oil my engine.
So long, boss. Be seeing ya.
Meanwhile, back in the sleepy village of Wattleclumdoosis, love was still burgeoning.
Sometimes I'd meet her on the village green of an evening.
Church bells, ducks.
The church bells would be ringing and the ducks would be quacking on the pond.
Louder.
What?
Louder.
And the ducks would be quacking on the
pond. No, the ducks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know if it was just me, but the ducks always seemed to quack louder when Monica walked by.
Cheerio, you old ducks.
Good evening, Miss Monica.
Hello, old Joe. How are your dear peasant parents?
Well, very well, thank you, Miss Monica. Still wringing a bare living from the soil. Are you going to church?
Yes. I've been having tea at the manor.
The manor?
We've been talking about my donkey drop.
Your donkey drop? There's something I'd like to give you, Miss Monica.
A present for me?
Yeah. It's not much, I know. It's not like the presents a rich man could give you, but I'd like you to have it.
Oh, a cigarette card of you.
Yeah, that's my face.
With love from Prestwick J. Glebeshire. Thank you, Joe. Oh, it's top hole.
They're giving them away with packets of Red Queen. It's got the story of my life on the back.
I shall always value it. Only a week now until the team for the Oval is chosen. Oh, Joe, I hope you play.
Selection committee is above reproach.
Oh, of course. All the same, it would be wonderful.
Thank you, Miss Monica.
Won't you call me Monica?
May I?
Good night, old Joe.
Good night. Monica.
It was around that time that I started writing poetry.
He still does. Yeah. You've had some poems published, haven't you, Joe?
In the village paper, yes.
And so, for the first time in 10 years, I was back. Back in that green and pleasant land. It was torture. Sheer torture. Second day back, I had to take Carlo to the Oval to introduce him to the game we were about to irrevocably undermine. Two teams of vicars were playing. Carlo was singularly unenlightened by the experience. Meanwhile, the professor was busy perfecting his plans. His first port of call was a house agent's in Loamshire. I'll give him this. He did have a marvellous eye for detail.
Good morning.
Are you Frith or Pierce?
Well, actually, neither. Perfect, the name.
Perfect. I, as you can see from my large-brimmed floppy hat, my big floppy bow tie, my black velvet jacket, and the fact that I am carrying an easel under my arm, am an artist. I am Popplewell R.A. Are you a devotee of crickets?
Yes, I...
Splendid. Then I am confident we can do business together. For as L.E.G. Glance has observed in his noble work, Principles of Sound Crickets, what sweeter music than the crack of bat dispatching the leather to the ropes across the green tapis? But enough chittle-chattle on subjects of mutual interest. I have long intended to paint the sweeping expanses of scenery to be found in this neighborhood. With this object in view, I propose to settle here for a short while. In short, house agent, as you say in your admirable profession, I desire a res.
How many rooms?
I care not one jot of it.
Oh, but I say...
But the only condition upon which I insist is that the res must be set in surroundings of the greatest loneliness. For one of my temperament and artistic eminence, seclusion is imperative. I should prefer to a res with a cellar mit a strong door. Many of my canvases are of immense value. You understand?
I think I have exactly what you're after.
The day I missed that catch at long leg off Swiggins G. By rights, it was a dolly, but my mind just wasn't on the job, you see, Mr. Johnson. So I wrote to Monica that very night, asking to see her on the village green the next evening.
Good evening, old Joe.
Good evening, Monica. Be playing golf, then?
No, why?
You've got a golf club in your hand.
Oh! I must have lightly caught it up on leaving the vicarage. Isn't it a beautiful evening? The sun looks like a great big cricket ball, doesn't it?
It does, Monica. You couldn't drop that one, could you?
Is that what you wanted to talk to me about?
You've heard, have you?
I read of it in the paper.
The paper said it was a chance that should have been accepted. It's true. It should have been accepted.
Then why did you not accept it?
I was thinking of something else.
That was very wrong, Joe.
I know. Don't think I haven't tasted the bitterest remorse, but I could not help myself. I was making up a poem. A love poem, Monica.
Oh, Joe. When you were fielding at long neck. Oh,
don't reproach me, Monica. I know I deserve it, but I just couldn't help it. Would you like to hear the poem?
Oh, yes.
O Monica, whose lovely face is matched by thy tremendous grace.
Oh, Joe, you mean you missed a catch because of me?
Yes, that's why I had to speak to you tonight. The thought of you is spoiling my fielding. Monica, my darling, I'm only a cricket pro, but
only?
But I love you, Monica. I've loved you ever since the day you brought me the belt. Do you remember?
Remember? The day shall be forever etched into my heart.
You saved me from shame that day, Monica. That was like you, so tender always, so thoughtful for others. Oh, Monica, will you marry me?
Here, Joe, is a chance that will certainly be accepted.
Oh, you mean you will marry me?
If Father consents, Joe.
Oh, Monica, darling, I can hardly believe it. Are you sure you don't mind my parents being only rude old peasants?
As though I could. Besides, I don't suppose they are as rude as all that.
I'm afraid they are. They're a bit gnarled, too. It comes from wringing a bare living from the soil. Are you sure you don't mind?
Gnarled or not, they are the parents of the man I love. Look, Joe! The sky has gone the colour of the Glebeshire cricket team.
Blow me down if it hasn't.
Of course, Daddy had always hoped I'd marry Norman. He'd set his heart on it, really. Poor man was a little bit shocked. But in the end, he gave his consent. On one condition, Joe play at the Oval.
I could wish for nothing better, sir. We are in the hands of the selection committee.
Yes, my boy. May Providence guide them rightly in their decisions.
Oh, Father, that means you want me to marry Joe?
No, I'm thinking of the supreme importance of beating Australia.
Amen.
When does the selection committee send in their balloon?
Tomorrow. The professor came to visit me on the day the selectors ascended in their balloon. I was living in lodgings at the time.
Lodgings?
Well, I lived there, didn't I?
Oh, yes, my sweet.
Well, I did. Oh, if you had seen the brilliance of his eyes, the dome-like forehead, the hypnotic power of the man. Oh, he was a genius, all right, no doubting that. I was bowled over. I would have done anything for him.
No comment.
Oh, shut up, Ralphie.
Oh, those days of waiting for the balloon to descend were some of the most wretched of my life. I found it so hard to concentrate on any of my good works about the village, though goodness knows I tried. But then the balloon came down, and I saw that old Joe's name was included in the 13. I was ecstatic. I rushed immediately to see Father.
Who put a bit of a damper on things, didn't he?
I was going to say that, Joe. Yes, he pointed out that Joe might not make the 11. I refused to believe that possibility. I rushed out to see Joe on the village green.
Oh, Joe.
Oh, Monica.
If only you are chosen, Joe.
If only I am chosen, Monica. Mind where you swing that coat stand, Monica.
I must have lightly caught it up on leaving the vicarage. Oh, Joe.
Oh, Monica.
We'd arranged to meet at the Panatrope Palace of Varieties to finalize plans. The professor came disguised as a tired businessman.
My George, my old college chum!
Howdy, boss!
This is indeed a surprise, by Jove. Hey, oh, how long it seems since our madcap student days at Oxford University.
Say, boss, I ain't never been a student no place.
Pascalo, you grow more stupid every day. We must drink, my old chums, to celebrate this happy reunion. Oh, there, mine host. Ah! 3 glasses of foaming English ale.
Here you are, sir.
Cheerio, my companions. A health, as we old students say, to our alma mater. Well, my friends, our plans are in train. You brought it over safely, Ralph?
Yes, it's where we arranged.
Excellent, excellent. For the moment, I shall say no more. We shall be joined presently by a lady.
Gee, a dog, huh? Say, what's the big idea of this frail boss?
That would unfold itself. Suffice it for the moment to say that the cooperation of Flash Alice is essential to my plans. And behold, here she comes. My hat! My delightful niece! This is indeed a surprise. Allow me to present to you, my dear, my old college chum.
Evening, boys. Gin and tonic for me.
Come here, miss! Glad to know you, sister. Sit down, honey bunch.
What are you staring at, lover boy?
Bog pool on sea.
How did you know that?
What is this, a previous acquaintanceship?
Ralph, the disappointment.
Oh, no.
You two know each other?
We were neighbors once in Purley.
How are your mother and father?
I haven't seen them since that time. And you?
And not since I won the beauty contest at Bogpool-on-Sea.
If I may interrupt this touching reunion, we have business to discuss.
Gee, Mama, has that dog got swell curves, or has she? She's the kind of dame I could fall for in a big way. But the big guy wants to talk business.
So now you have the outline of Plan A. Do not forget it. Ah, the performance recommences. Well, au revoir, chums of my boyhood. Au wiedersehen, TTFN. How I have enjoyed reviving the memory of old pranks.
So long, boss. Say, honey bunch, I'll be seeing you.
Sure.
Certainly not. As soon as Flash Alice has completed her part in this affair, she will disappear. Until then, you will have absolutely no contact with each other, you understand?
Goodbye, Alice. Nice meeting you again.
And you.
Do you remember those games of cricket we used to play in my garden? You were a jolly good spin bowler.
So were you, Ralphie.
I remember you bowled me the only unplayable ball I've ever had to face in my life.
Out of the back of my hand.
Oh, that's the one. An absolute corker.
fizzing through the air like a slow-motion bullet, landing on a perfect length and spinning at right angle. No,
not quite a right angle.
Well, almost. Do you still play?
Not anymore, Ralphie. You?
I'm thinking of taking it up again.
You should. You were very good.
I am loath to interrupt this discourse on the merits of what is best in crickets, but the performance, as you can hear, has recommenced, and it is time we rediscovered our seats. Ralph, permit me.
Goodbye, Alice.
Goodbye, Ralph.
And so the great day arrived. You were in ominously good form, weren't you, Leth?
Well, Norm, I suppose I was quite fit.
Quite fit? I love old cricketers. They're such characters. Quite fit. His last two scores prior to the Oval Test match were 400 odd and a 200 and something.
422 and 276.
Quite fit. No, but seriously, Leth, tell me, never asked you this one. Do you think we picked the right side?
That's a tricky one, Norm.
If only Joe is playing, Father.
It is hardly a spin bowler's wicket, my child.
Say, hey, Honeybunch, am I in the right joint for the ball game?
I beg your pardon?
Yes, you are.
Have they tossed yet?
I believe they have. Oh. England have chosen to bat.
Well, it looks like a splendid wicket.
Yes, indeed.
Daddy, look! The team list. Oh! 12 men!
Now, my dear. Pull yourself together.
Yes. So sorry, Father. Please forgive me. I know it's England that matters. I promise. I'll be a splendid English girl and keep a stiff upper lip.
Ah, here comes human cry to open the innings. Look at that extraordinary man with his dove-like forehead and piercing eyes.
The BBC have managed to unearth commentary of this test match, so we have the opportunity to hear again the voice of one of our most distinguished commentators. I refer, of course, to the great John Bell Travers. John, as many of you will know, was a great enthusiast and no mean cricketer in his own right. John Bell Travers.
So it'll be Hugh to take strike. Sitting beside me is Alf Blowman, the Yorkshire quickie. Alf, Hugh's just asked for the sight screen to be moved. Why is that, do you think?
Yes. Oh, good morning, John. Good morning, everyone.
And Bumper has three slips, four short legs and a silly point, as well as the customary mid-off. And we're all set. First ball of this last test, this timeless test that by definition must have a result. And Bumper is running up. Hostile bowler, this Bumper. Tall, strongly built, full of menace. Hugh waits, solid, majestic. A king awaiting the deference of his subjects. There's an enormous crowd here today. One man over there with an extraordinary dome-like forehead. Bumper still running, Hugh still waiting like a king. The fielders all crouching in their yellow caps. I don't mean they're actually crouching in them. They're not that small. The fielders, I mean, not the caps, which are quite small. And Bumper's nearing the wicket now. I suppose I mean they're in their yellow caps, all crouching, except for the mid-off, that is, who's standing in his yellow cap, and the bowler, who isn't wearing his, and he's at the wicket now, and he bowls. Outside the off stump, Hugh moves across, full of majesty, smiles contemptuously, and leaves it alone. Bumper starts walking back to his mark. Alf, these caps, they really are very yellow, aren't they?
That's right, John. This Bumper lad. I hadn't seen him before this tour, but...
It informs me that was Bumper's 925th ball of the series.
Really?
Oh, it was grim stuff, all right.
Torture. Sheer torture.
It was certainly full of grim drama, those opening overs.
An hour and a half's been played, and as yet no score. Hugh not out naught. Cry, not out, naught, total, naught. grim, back-to-the-wall stuff, this cricket. Every ball full of grim, back-to-back, two-up, two-down. Very sooty drama. And I must just say a thank you on behalf of the commentary team to Mrs. Morgan of Kilve for her splendid lemon sponge. We shall enjoy that later.
I was in the dressing room when it happened, writing a farewell letter.
One of the most beautiful letters I have ever received. I have it off by heart. You see, old Joe here might have come from rude peasant stock, and might indeed have had parents who spat in a fire and kicked sheep and spoke with two dots over their vowels and wrung a bare living from the soil. But Joe himself was one of nature's gentlemen.
And Bumper Bowles. And oh dear, Hugh has inadvertently let this ball hit his bat, and it's trickling down through the slips, and they're going to take a run. Extraordinary piercing eyes that man has, and they're running, and my word, whatever's the matter? The two batsmen have fallen down dead, on the wicket. Well, goodness me. Bill, any instances you can recall of both batsmen retiring dead simultaneously? I'll leave that one with you for the present. And the fielders in their yellow caps have stopped crouching and are walking over to take a look. Well. Alf, I don't expect you used to die in your day, did you?
Yeah, you can say that again, John. No, seriously, though, I just don't know why these young lads can't keep it up.
Plan A had begun to take effect.
Yes, I just finished writing the letter when you and Cry was brought into the dressing room. For the life of me, dead as sheep.
Dead as dead sheep.
That's right.
It was a lovely letter, old Joe. I still have it, you know.
Yeah, I know.
How did it begin?
Dear Monica.
Dear Monica.
I had to think fast. When I got back to the dressing room, I discovered old little Teddy Trimmer was out as well, lying curled up in a corner. He was supposed to be first wicket in. So I remember turning to little Croxton, our keeper, and saying, "Feeling fit?" "Feeling fine," came back his doughty northern reply. "Very well," I said. "You and I will hold the fort for England." Which we did. 8 for no wicket at lunch.
A doctor soon discovered they weren't dead. They'd just been drugged. Sir Timothy was horrified, of course. Someone phoned Scotland Yard, and before you could say, "How's that?" Posse had arrived.
I can't remember, old Joe. Had you sent the letter by then, or was it still on your person?
Oh, I think it was still on my person.
Still glowing on your person. Dear Monica, it began.
Police! Police! Posse here, out of the way, please!
Posse, a pseudonym, of course, is still alive. However, he now works for the security services, so was unable to comment on these events, except to tell us that he'd eaten a kipper the morning of the first day of the Oval Test match. Our lawyers, after careful scrutiny, have confirmed that the inclusion of Posse in our story is not prejudicial to the national security.
Posse here, out of the way, please! Out of the way!
Are these the two men?
Yes.
Rigor mortis is obviously set in. How long do you say these men had been dead?
They're not dead, they're drugged.
Drugged? Understood from the wire as this was a murder case. Well, never mind. I shall unravel it. Get busy, boys. Now then, I want some information.
A foreigner has done this.
Possibly. Though, of course, it might equally well have been a socialist.
Yes, that is true. Yet I often said that I would rather see all the pavilions in England burnt to the ground than see them containing a foreigner or a socialist. Well, I've been proved right.
Who are you?
I am Sir Timothy Blood, the popular veteran and doyen of the cricketing world.
All right. Anything to say?
Oh, only that I shall thank heaven with my last breath that this did not happen at Lord's.
Why not at Lord's?
Because, my dear fellow, Lord's is the mecca of cricket lovers all the world over.
Ah, yes, sir. What is this mecca, anyway?
Well, frankly, I do not know. But I've always imagined it to be a very large cricket ground somewhere in Asia. They're coming round.
One! No! Door!
Am I out?
You have been, but you're all right now.
Oh, I don't remember getting out.
Was it that wretched LBW Nought again?
Oh, my brave little fellow, you've been the victim of a dastardly trick. Some villain has attempted to tamper with our national pastime.
Oh, who could it have been?
That is for the police to discover, if they can.
Right. Now, you two, have you any idea of how this happened?
Well, not a clue.
Laura, who would have thought it?
You took nothing to drink of any kind before going into bat.
Oh, only the special drink that Mr. Blood sent us.
I sent you no drink.
But the waitress told us that you'd sent it specially. She said that the drink had special tonic qualities and we were to drink it to the health of England. Now, isn't that right, you?
That is right.
See here, boys. What was she like, this waitress?
She was a very pretty but rather fast-looking girl. She had very red hair and violet eyes.
Right.
And glamour. Lots of glamour.
We're getting somewhere now. The drug was in a drink brought by a bogus waitress. I reckon we've got to find that girl with the red hair and... violet eyes.
Why not find out if there are any foreigners on the ground, and if so, arrest them?
Or socialists.
Or socialists. Trimmer's coming round.
Wait!
Now, Trimmer, you were brought a drink which was purported to have been sent to you by Mr. Blood. Is that right?
Now, Inspector.
Think carefully, man. The solution to the whole case may depend upon your answer. Are you quite certain that you were not brought a drink by a beautiful waitress with red hair and violet eyes?
No, but that just describes the small boy who asked me for my autograph at the back of the pavilion.
Did you give it to him?
Yes.
Did you use your own pencil?
No, the boy had one already.
Aha! The drug was administered through the pencil. You're from the working classes, aren't you?
Am I?
So, that's how it was done.
How was it done?
The working classes always lick the ends of pencils.
By Jove, how true.
Ever since our last tour there, Peter, those Australian cards have been dying to wreak their revenge.
True. And they're foreigners to boot.
And almost certainly socialists, or will be within the next 100 years.
Which can only mean...
Everyone fit? As if you didn't know, Lethbridge. Well, let me tell you, it takes more than violet-haired foreign waitresses to undermine our national pastime.
What are you talking about?
We will answer your perfidy in the only way a gentleman should. By defeating you on the field of play.
Hey, listen, you don't think we had anything to do with all this, do you?
Listen, Lethbridge, don't play the innocent with me. We all know what you foreign convict socialists are like.
Ask Corbett to call me a socialist. Ended up in hospital.
Don't for a moment think that your threats can frighten me, you revenge-mad, bad sportsman.
Bad sportsman? That takes a biscuit. Who was it who started chucking balls at our throats, eh?
You lily-livered wallabies.
I'll get you for that.
Look. What? Scrawled all over the portrait of W.G.
In red lipstick.
The bad man.
Of course, I knew in my heart of hearts that it couldn't have been old Leth here.
Well, that's very kind of you, Norman.
Well, truth will out. Anyway, the second day, thank goodness, was near enough normal. And we ended up eating Stevens. Wouldn't you say, Leth?
Near enough, I'd say.
This chap here has got a tidy 70-odd.
78, not out.
But they only had a lead of 30-odd.
44.
So it was all Eden Stevens. Wouldn't you say, Leth?
Near enough, Norman.
Daddy and I were staying at Sir Timothy's Flood Street house for the duration of the game. I remember that evening of the second day very well indeed. I'd just received old Joe's letter. There we all were, sitting at the dinner table, talking about cricket. And all I could think about was that dear, sweet letter. That lovely letter.
Perhaps we could forget about the letter, my dear.
Forget about it? How could I forget about it? It was the loveliest letter I've ever received. Would you like to hear it, Miss Johnson?
Certainly, my dear. No.
Dear Monica, we must accept the decision of the selection committee, my darling. And remember that the most important thing of all is to beat Australia. I keep biting my lips a good deal and clenching and unclenching my fists in unrestrained fashion. But we must remember that perhaps the wicket would not have suited me. Goodbye, dearest Monica. I shall always keep the belt and remember your extraordinary radiance. Your broken-hearted, unselected Joe. That was it. That was the letter.
Oh, splendid letter.
It was at the end of the second day's play that we put Plan B into operation.
We were having dinner, and...
Sir Timothy was talking about Joshua Slingsby, who'd run him out.
And so there I was, one short of the coveted three figures.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it, Willis?
A gentleman downstairs wishes to speak to young Mr. Norman.
Who?
Yes, the arrival of the so-called selection committee was indeed a drama.
This black car pulled up outside the house, and this big man got out wearing a mask. He told the butler he wanted to see the captain of the ball game, because he was the selection committee. Well, I felt something was wrong from the start. Oh, unfortunately, I couldn't quite put my finger on it at the time.
You may be wondering what dear old Joe was doing outside Sir Timothy's Flood Street house. Well, you see, he'd posted himself there in hope of catching a last glimpse of me, hadn't you, Joe?
That's right, Monica.
Both of us were broken-hearted, you see.
Well, I knew the selection committee were always fairly secretive, so when the masked man asked me to get in the car, I didn't give it a second thought. As soon as I got in the car, however, I knew I'd made a mistake. I felt something hard poke in my ribs and a voice in my ear.
So, Mama, I says to him, you're in a tough spot, buddy. If you don't want a hand in your dinner pail, better act old-fashioned and don't try to pull a fast one. Likewise, keep your push shut, or I'd sure give you the heat.
I can tell you, that was one of the lowest moments of my life. I felt what can only be described as the blackest despair. I thought about tomorrow. What if I wasn't there to lead my boys at the start of play? What would the world think of me? I don't mind admitting that I let a groan escape my lips.
And then, just as the car began to move away, I realized what was wrong with this so-called selection committee. They really knew what they were doing. So without hesitation, I sprang for the back of the car and hung on to the luggage grid for dear life.
You must remember, I had not the slightest inkling that any of this was happening.
Oh, that's right. So, through the night, the black car sped.
Out of London and into the countryside through the night, the black car sped.
Well, it was a bit uncomfortable, I have to admit, hanging on to the luggage grid. But once you've made up your mind, you've only got your body to do something with.
It's marvellous what these chaps can do when they put their mind to it. Of course, if he'd been a batsman, it would have been more comfortable. Stronger forearms, you know. Anyway, it must have been well after midnight when we finally drew up before a small stone house in the middle of a vast, lonely moor, where a hooded figure awaited us.
Good evening, Mr. Blood.
I scorn to answer.
Now, Mr. Blood, I would like to talk to you.
You cowardly swine!
See here, boss, let me beat up this guy pronto.
Restrain your boyish enthusiasm, Carlo. Me and Mr. Blood are going to have a little talk. I have a little proposition to put to you. My suggestion is that you arrange the game of crickets you are currently embarked upon in such a way that your adversaries win. If you do this, I shall release you. That is a promise, and the gentleman's word is his bind.
Gentleman, indeed. I scorn your proposition. I would rather die.
And perhaps you will have to, meine Liebling.
Let me give him the works, boss. I got a kind of wistful feeling I'd like to croak this guy.
No, Carlo, not yet. Let's put him in the cellar for the present and give him an opportunity to think. Perhaps he'll change his mind.
Never.
Failing that, at least he won't be around tomorrow for the resumption of the cricket's competition, which will sadly miss his presence.
Do your worst. I will never let down my side.
We shall see. Sew him up, Carlo. Ralph, be of assistance to Carlo if you want.
Please, Mr.
Blood says he will never disappoint his side. You presumably would not like to disappoint yours now, would you?
Filthier and filthier. Of course, some twisted imaginations might see what I did as poetic justice. I mean, the number of times he used to tie me up when I was his fag. Toofs my toes in front of his fire. Bounce a rugby ball on my head. No, I don't see it like that. For me, every moment was torment. Sheer, unadulterated torment. I felt the lowest of the low. Can you imagine
A West Indian tying up Viv Richards, hmm? Or a Pakistani tying up Imran Khan, or an Indian tying up Kapil Dev, or a New Zealander tying up Richard Hadley, or an Englishman tying up, whoever it is. No, you can't, can you? It's unimaginable, is it not? I did the unimaginable. I sunk that low. I tied up the English captain. A fag tied up the head of us. Hell, torment, torture.
Is it possible for a man to stoop that low? Blessinger. Blessinger.
So there I am, guarding this cricketing guy, and everything is hunky-dory. But it is not so snappy guarding a guy who is all sewed up and can't talk, can he?
I had to walk to clear my burning head, lost in that vast, desolate moor. I fondly imagined that one day my crime would be forgotten. So I thought it had. Till you came along.
So, then I get to thinking about you, Mama, and about my childhood days, and how I croaked Brother Benjamino with a penknife. You remember that, Mama? And so I get very sentimental indeed, because there is nothing that makes a guy so sentimental as thinking about his childhood's days. So there I sit with the tears running down my face, and presently I think I'd like a drink.
Do you know what kept me going through those dark hours in the cellar? I'll tell you. Poetry. That's right, poetry. Never thought it would come in useful, but how wrong I was. Is there anybody there, said the traveller, knocking on the moonlit door? Those lines seem to sum up my predicament perfectly.
I didn't know what to do. That is, until the big man came upstairs and started to pour himself a few drinks. Well, he was crying, which seemed a bit strange. And anyway, before you could say how's that, I was down into the cellar.
All right, Skipper, it's me, Prestwick J. Let's just undo you. There.
What on earth are you doing here?
I happen to be on the back of the car, Skipper. I've been hanging about waiting for a chance to get to you. You must get away now, Skipper, to the Oval.
Have you any idea where we are?
I think we're in the heart of Loamshire, one of the minor counties.
Oh, yes, I remember. Egg-shaped county, isn't it? I think they have a wicket-keeper called Huggins. F. Huggins.
Yes, but you must get away, Skipper. The car is still outside. Take it and drive like buggery for London and the Oval. I'll stay here and take your place.
Why not come with me?
No, I thought it all out. If they come and find no one here, they will see that the game is up. But if they see a lifeless form of some sort, the villains may not suspect anything. They will remain here, and that may give the police a chance to catch them. Now, when you get to the nearest town, go to the police station and telephone to Detective Inspector Posse at the Yard. We want to exterminate these enemies of England.
You're a noble fellow, Prestwick. I will tie you up.
Quickly, Skipper, before anybody comes back.
There. Goodbye, Prestwick. I shall never forget this. And by the way, it doesn't matter about that chance you failed to accept in the Gritshire match. At least not very much.
Well, I couldn't thank him properly then, but I was grateful, all right.
Well, Mama, it is after daylight when presently the big shot eases in and says, is everything okay? Okay, boss, I says. Then the boss goes and looks at this cricketing guy. And presently he uses an old-fashioned word.
You're imbecile!
Thank you.
What's biting you, boss?
You
poor mutt! This is the wrong guy! Where's Norman Blood? Who in heck are you?
I'm a sap called Prestwick. I unsold the palooka who goes by the name of Blood while your tame ape was upstairs having an eyeball.
You poor mutton-headed fool! You dim-witted dirt! You have ruined my carefully thought-out plans! See here, boss, if a guy calls me names like that, his loving relations are around the next day ordering flowers.
Be quiet and listen. We're gonna scram out of here good and quick. This Blood palooka will set the dicks on this hideout. I'll give this punk a shot of something to keep his push shut, then we'll beat it.
The auto has disappeared. We're in one hell of a tough spot.
Well, time then to put Plan C into action. We must use it now, if we don't want to be caught like rats in a trap.
Posse and I passed each other on the way. Unfortunately, by the time he got to the cottage on the moors, the birds had flown. I got to the Oval just as the bell was ringing for the ground to be cleared. I just had time to plunge into flannel and pads and make my way to the wicket. By now, I was determined that nothing would stop us winning. But alas, it wasn't to be our morning.
Oh, don't I know? You batted rather well.
Must have been an exciting game. Sad I missed it, really. Still, I've got the scorecard and all the press cuttings of the day's play, so it's not hard to imagine the way it went.
Our last wicket fell just after lunch, leaving you 120-odd to win.
122.
I'd scored 50-odd, not out.
48.
But cricket's the game of kings and the king of games, isn't it?
True.
And there's many a slip twixt cup and lip.
Many a gully, too.
So when we bagged thrust in the first over, it was clear that the game was by no means over.
Oh, you can say that again.
Often thought, Liv. Timeless test, this. And yet all wrapped up within 5 days.
That's right, Norm.
But there you are. Cricket all over.
That's cricket for you, Norm.
122 to win, and at tee, Australia was 77-6. But unfortunately, Lethbridge was still there, 44 not out.
Old Leth here reached his 50 at 5-odd.
503.
92 for 7 at 510, 100 up at 520.
Total was 114 when Gayheart made his remarkable catch.
One of the best.
114 for 8. 8 runs to win, 2 wickets to 4. Their wicketkeeper came in and scored a 4 off his first ball.
Inside edge.
Lake Lance.
4 to win, 3 to tie. Next ball he hit for 2.
Outside edge.
Oh, no, it was steered past points left hand.
2 to win, 1 to tie, and then the last ball of the over, Manly's hit the wicketkeepers off some cartwheeling. In comes Bumper.
No batsman, Bumper.
Ah, but Bumper isn't facing the bowling.
It's Lethbridge to face Truth, 2 runs to win, 1 to tie.
And it's Lethbridge to face Truth, 2 runs to win, 1 to tie. This is exciting stuff. And over there, a splendid young girl has absentmindedly snatched the hat off her neighbour's head and is lightly swinging it. While down below our commentary position, I could just see Sir Timothy gnawing his moustache, and who can blame him? Bumper is coming to the wicket, and, down there, at the Vauxhall end, a bishop has been sick. Well, Alf, I don't know when we last saw such an exciting finish to a test match.
Ah, that's right. You see, the thing is, John, when you do pitch it up, it's got a chance to swing, you see. I just don't understand.
Absolutely. And Truth is standing there, nervously throwing the ball from hand to hand, and, who could blame him? By the way, Bill, do we have a Bumper playing for any of the counties? Rather jolly if we did. Then I could say it's Bumper to Bumper. Or vice versa, Bumper to Bumper. And a plane circling overhead. Rather a medium-paced plane, wouldn't you say, Al? It's got a pretty little streamer streaming out behind it. What does it say now? Keep that schoolgirl fragrance. Absolutely. And Al finds that funny for some reason. And Bumper's almost reached the wicket, and Truth is nervously waiting to bowl what might be the last over of this historic test match. And Bumper's arrived at the non-striker's end, and we're ready. The fielders crouching in their caps, Lethbridge crouching over his bat, and the moment of truth has arrived. And a butterfly walks across the pitch. By Jove! Well, this is extraordinary. The plane's attacking us. This is extraordinary. I don't think I remember anything like this happening on a cricket ground before. I'll leave that one with you, Bill. As the plane is diving down towards the pitch. There are 3 men in here. They've got masks on. But I can see from here that one of them has a tremendously magnetic personality. One of them seems to be chewing something. Yes? Yes, through my glasses, I can see his jaws working. He's the chap with the gun. He's shooting now. I expect you in here. And all the players are lying full length on the ground. Blood at cover. Hugh at mid-off. Cry in the galley. I'm sorry. It's not. It's Gayheart in the galley. It's a little hard to tell when they're all lying flat. Cry seems to be trembling a little, but Hugh looks just as kingly as ever. And here's the plane, diving again. I can see the man leaning out, still chewing. He shoots. A long burst. By George, he's got Timmer. He's dead. No, I'm sorry. No, he's not. He's rolling over. My word, that must have been a near thing. Fortunately, this fellow's shooting is not very accurate. Hostile, but not accurate. Hasn't found a length yet. Well, really, this is all tremendously exciting. By God, that was a close one.
Oh, come, nearly at the middle stump, did that.
And there's that splendid girl waving her neighbour's hat in the air. What an example to womankind she's setting. And hello, here are the guards doubling out. They've got rifles. And they're going to shoot. Splendid fellows, these guards. This equipment beautifully clean. Buttons winking in the sun. And they're crouching in their helmets. Though heaven knows that won't afford them much protection. And they're opening fire. They're opening fire, yes. And here come a couple of tanks waddling along from the pavilion end. Where did we last see tanks on the field of play, Bill? I'll leave that one with you for the moment. And here comes Sir Timothy, rushing down from the pavilion steps. What a doyen he is. And he's shaking his fist at the plane and shouting. I wonder if you can hear him at home.
That's not a revolution! I would rather see myself dead at my own feet than a cricket match interfered with in this abominable foreign fashion. Tell them to take that airplane.
I don't know if you heard that, but it was all quite splendid. And by Jove, it worked. The airplane is making off at full speed. And a crowd, they're cheering to the echo, and the splendid girl has tossed her neighbour's hat onto the pavilion roof. By golly, we could do with her in the outfield. And the guards are returning to the pavilion. The players will be getting up in a minute, I expect. Ah, yes, yes, the umpires are just cautiously raising their heads, and I expect play will soon recommence. Well, Alf, that was an exciting divertissimo, wouldn't you say?
Well, John, of course, in my day...
When we got to our feet, we realized that we'd all escaped unscathed, except for little Teddy Trimmer, who'd been slightly hit in the leg.
A miracle, no?
Indeed it was.
When I saw little Teddy Trimmer being carried off, I have to admit I felt a wave of ecstasy pass through me. My Joe's going to play for England, I thought. I jumped up and made my way to the pavilion to wish him luck and thank him for his lovely letter. I'd no idea, you see, what he'd been up to.
The problem was, who was going to take Trimmer's place on the field?
I found my way to the players' dressing room. It was empty. There was no Joe. There hung his flannels, there his blazer, with a pencil sticking out. Probably the pencil you'd use to write the letter.
Yeah.
But no Joe.
In the dressing room, I found Monica. Norman, she asked, where is Joe?
His answer amazed me. He said, bound and gagged in the heart of an egg-shaped minor county called Loamshire, where they have a wicket-keeper by the name of Huggins F.
Then, she gasped, he will not be able to field.
No, replied Norman. I'm sorry for that, because he's a noble-hearted youth and saved me from those villains.
Sir Norman said that?
Or words to that effect.
But who will field now instead of Trimmer, she asked.
That is just what I have to decide, said Norman. Perhaps one of the ground staff, he added.
Suddenly her face lit up. I have an idea, she said.
And here comes Norman Blood onto the field of play, accompanied by Prestwick. Though a very changed Prestwick, I must say. By Jove, he's lost a lot of weight in the last few days. And Alf Blowman's place is taken by Trevor Flayling. Flayers, Prestwick looks a bit overweight, doesn't he?
I think you mean he's lost weight, don't you?
I think I probably do, you dear old thing. And hello, Prestwick is whispering something in Truth's left ear. What I'd give to be an earwig in Truth's left ear at the moment. And we're all set to begin the game again. Here we go.
Oh.
2 runs to win, 1 run to tie, Truth to bowl to Lethbridge. Prestwick skips gracefully to mid-wicket, and the England team crouch in their caps. Here comes Truth, and he bowls. My goodness, he's tossed the ball high up into the air. There it goes, soaring up and up. By Jove, I've never seen one toss so high. It's still climbing.
At first, I thought it had slipped out of his hand by mistake.
A pigeon veers out of the flight path, and at last it's beginning to descend. Lethbridge's face is a picture, isn't it, Flayler?
I don't know. You've got the glasses.
Well, at first I was just amazed, Norm.
Prestwick at mid-wicket is lightly swinging himself round and... Oh! Look at Lethbridge's face!
Utter contempt was written all over it.
And he's beginning to look a touch nervous, wouldn't you say, Flayers? And who could blame him? And now, nerves have turned to dismay. The world's greatest batsman does not know what to do. He does not know how to play this ball.
I leapt back into my crease
and took an almighty swipe at the ball.
And he's bowled! Lethbridge is bowled! England have won!
Lethbridge blow! And pandemonium is breaking loose all over the ground. Lethbridge has been bowled by a donkey drop.
By a donkey drop.
A donkey drop.
Donkey drop.
And the crowds are swarming across the field of play, and the players are running for cover. England have won by one run. What a day for English cricket. And a red bus goes down the Kennington Road, and I wonder how many passengers on that bus know that England have won.
By one run.
By one run.
Yes, England have won by one run and a donkey drop. Flayleth, one of the most exciting and extraordinary games I've ever seen.
Clearly a good result for England and a less good one for Australia.
Clearly a good result for England and a less good one for Australia. What a marvellous summary that is. England have won the fifth and final test match and the series by one run and a donkey drop. And now, as the crowds gather around the pavilion...
That evening, a crowd gathered outside our house in Flood Street.
There we are, my heroic one. A bandage for your poor head.
But, Monica...
Lie still, my wounded warrior.
But...
Would my mangled martyr like a glass of water or a change of pillows?
Monica.
Yes?
You know, don't you, that I had to do what I did. I couldn't have left the skipper in the hands of those villains.
You could have, but you didn't. Because you're a loyal and long-suffering serf, aren't you?
Yes.
Does it hurt?
No. But because of it, you see, I never played for England.
No, I know you didn't. Lie still while I apply balm to your bruised body.
But...
I did, though.
You?
I took your place, Joe. It was I who went on the field as 12th man. And I who advised Truth to bowl that donkey drop.
Oh, Monica.
And so, you see, one of us has played for England. I'm sure Father wouldn't mind which it was.
Monica, You're wonderful.
I think I am, rather. Lie still, dear Joe, while I take your temperature and then I will put your arm in a sling.
But, Monica, dear, there's nothing wrong with it.
As far as I'm concerned, we won the game and the series fair and square. The powers that be, however, were of a different mind.
Yes, controversy dogged this game almost as soon as the last ball had been bowled. The press had a field day. What were the police doing to capture the bad men, it was asked? And who was the mysterious 12th man if Prestwick had at the time been bound and gagged somewhere in the heart of Loamshire? But soon these questions were overshadowed by a controversy that threatened to bring the playing of international cricket to an untimely end. It has gone down in history as the great donkey drop controversy.
Yes, well, it started when his cricket board sent a letter to Lord saying that the donkey drop was not a legitimate ball to bowl and therefore the match should be played again. Stuff and nonsense.
Well, Norm, you've got to remember the body line series.
Let me ask you, Leth. Were you physically threatened by that ball?
No.
Was it bowled or chucked?
It was bowled.
Did you protest at the time?
No,
but... you didn't. In fact, you were most sporting about the whole thing. If I remember correctly, your comment at the time was, "Everyone is very fit." Hardly the statement of a man deeply aggrieved. Now, I'm afraid the truth is, Lethbridge, that your board were miffed, that's all. Plain miffed.
They were miffed, that's all. It was just common or garden sour grapes.
And the result was that, not wishing to unduly upset one of the colonies, the Houses of Parliament debated a bill declaring the game a draw.
Which, of course, is an impossibility in an endless test. Oh, it was a shameful day for England.
Give these people an inch and they'll take a mile.
The debate makes fascinating reading. It can be found in Hansard, but it seems in hindsight inevitable that the bill would be passed, the match declared a draw, and Lethbridge's final score adjusted to read 65 not out.
It still makes my blood boil. It would not be going too far to say that that wretched Craven bill marked the beginning of the end of empire. Give them an inch and they'll take a mile. Nothing personal, you understand, Leth.
We all thought we'd failed miserably. I remember sitting in that cafe with Carlo and...
And me.
We were sitting at another table.
But I was there.
Yes, of course you were there. But you weren't at our table. You weren't at our table when the professor arrived.
I heard everything he said.
Well, I'm sure you did.
Well, it came as quite a surprise, Mr. Johnston. There we were, sitting, when along came the professor, disguised as a yachtsman. As he passed me, he furtively handed me a bulky package.
And then he came and sat at our table. The proceeds, my friends, of our recent trip to England.
Gee, boss, say, do these international punks out of the door okay and hunky-dory?
As you see, Callum.
Ain't they swell?
But
suddenly realize we were defeated. We failed. It seems that I underrated both the madness of the English and the insane complications of this game of crickets. It appears that after our somewhat hurried departure from the Oval, an English sportsman by the name of Truth outwitted the principal native Lethbridge by bowling in an illegitimate manner. There is a kind of a ball known as a donkey drop.
A donkey drop, of which I must confess I had not previously heard, since it is not mentioned by Mr. L.E.G. Glance in his monumental work.
The delivery of this ball has plunged the British Empire into the utmost confusion. Only urgent action by the English government, who have declared the match to be a draw, has prevented disaster. My employers, who, as I told you, represent important international interests, are greatly delighted at the turn of events and have congratulated me most warmly. The affair may therefore, despite certain hitches in our arrangements, be said to have concluded in a blaze of success.
I always knew them guys was phony, but this sure beats everything.
And now, my friends, as to our future operations, I have devised a novel and interesting scheme which I think will prove to be tolerably lucrative. I propose, in short, that we should kidnap the infant daughter of Socrates F. Grunberg, the well-known millionaire who is at present upon a visit to Europe from the United States.
I can't tell you how relieved I was at the time. At last, a crime where I wouldn't feel such a wretched outcast, so utterly filthy. Carlo, he wasn't so keen.
I guess this crime is not so good. Since it is well known to one and all that us killers get very sentimental about little dolls, especially when these curly-headed dolls say, "Tell me a fairy story, Mr. Stranger," because we get to thinking about our innocent childish days and our dear old mamas and Christmas, and then we get very sentimental indeed. So I think, Mama, maybe I'll give the boss the deadpan and give up crime.
Yes, yes, extraordinary. Next day he was gone. Haven't heard from him since. Of course we both know, don't we, who he turned into. Yes, yes, of course we do. Who would have thought it? 2 days later, the professor disappeared as well. The bad men were no more. Curious, it was almost as if the professor needed Carlo, and without him we were mere shadows. Well, Alice and I decided to go traveling. We liked it here, decided to stay for a while, never left. Wasn't long before I got a nice little export business going, and that was that, the end. Nothing left to say.
By all accounts, it was a pretty wedding which was held that autumn day in the old church of Washington Deuces. Many distinguished cricketers were present, as well as almost all the members of the Glebeshire team, who subsequently formed a guard of honour, the happy pair walking from the church beneath an arch of crossed cricket bats.
Well, I must say, I was a little surprised at her choice of husband, as was Peter. But as I see it, one can't begrudge a man who's rescued you from the jaws of death, can one? That would be merely petty.
Well, it was a fairy tale wedding, really.
Everyone was there.
We repaired to the wedding breakfast at the Earthy Peasant. Immensely jolly, if a little bit rustic. Prestwick's parents got a little bit out of hand. They weren't used to the champagne, you know.
Mr. Lethbridge sent a telegram.
Heartiest congratulations, it read. Everyone is very fit.
That was nice of him.
No, all in all, a splendid time was had by one and all. Lots of splendid speeches, all that sort of thing.
And at last, amid showers of confetti, we set off for Googly Cottage. Do you remember, Joe? It was a beautiful starlit evening.
Oh, could I ever forget it?
Are you happy, Spinballer of mine?
Wildly happy, my little mystery cricketer.
And you'll never, never grow tired of your little wife?
Never. Besides, it's not very long until the next cricket season.
And in 4 years' time, the Australians will be here again. Perhaps by that time we shall have one or more little Spinballers tumbling on our simple lawn.
I hope they'll be left-handed. It helps.
I suppose it does.
Why, of course. See if a chap bowls round the wicket.
Nice little leggy. Shame, really, he wasn't left-handed. Might have stood a better chance of getting in the team then. Still, he was a stalwart county player. And how many people can you say that about, eh?
I always thought it was a mistake, not using Joe at the highest level. But there you are. Perhaps my judgment isn't entirely objective.
No, never married myself. Never seemed to find the time. Unlike old Lethier. How many times have you been spliced?
Only three, no.
And how many children?
10.
One short, eh? Well, in the children department, anyway. Like Hitler, eh?
That's right, no.
And you never saw the professor again?
No, no, of course there have always been rumours. Some have claimed that he was Hitler, others that he was Stalin, others even that he was Churchill. Truth is undoubtedly less glamorous. Well, if you'd known the man, I think you'd have agreed that his talents were prodigious. He could be doing anything.
You don't think he's dead, then?
No. Man like that lives his allotted span. You will tell me if you find his whereabouts, won't you, Brown?
Of course I will. Hoping against hope that we'd be able to discover the professor's whereabouts before this documentary was broadcast, we deliberately allowed ourselves these last few minutes to report on latest developments. I'm now speaking to you live from Broadcasting House. Unfortunately, the bad news is that our researchers have continued to draw a virtual blank. The professor is, to all intents and purposes, beyond the grave. However, I would just like to say that if by any chance any of you who've listened to this documentary know of any information that might lead us to the professor, we would be more than grateful. We've tried to give you as thorough an account as is possible of the events of that summer. But without the professor, our story will always remain frustratingly unfinished. Please, if any of you have any information, pass it on to me.
He was there, all right. I suppose it was one of the most amazing test matches I can ever remember.
I'll never forget it. Will you, Lev?
Never, Norm. Never.
It undoubtedly produced one of the most beautiful letters I have ever had the privilege to read.
I suppose you could say the game brought us together.
Yes, I lost my hat during that game. Some young woman threw it on...
The Amazing Test Match Crime was dramatised by Peter Thompson from the book by Adrian Allington. Joe was played by Tom Wilkinson, Monica, Madeline Smith, Norman Blood, Trevor Nichols, Sir Timothy, Gerard Green. The Professor, Bill Patterson, Ralph the Disappointment, Nicholas Leprevost, Sawn Off Carlo, Danny Schiller, Alice Arnold, Bill Travers, James Faulkner, Alf Bloman, Brian Miller, Lethbridge, Peter Dalson.
You say it's a ball game.
The Vicar, Alan Thompson. Willis, Michael Kilgariff. And Posse, Joe Dunlop. Vincent Brimble, John Bull, David Googe, and David King. The technical chappies were David Greenwood, Rosamund Mason, and Colin Guthrie. The director was Jane Morgan. And this is goodbye from me, Brian Johnston, at Broadcasting House.
I still play as Sabutio cricket. It's not
Hello?
The same.
Yes, speaking. Really? Where? The Vatican, you say?